On first down, Eagles are threatening. Wentz fakes the handoff, looks to his left, throws it back of the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Zach Ertz working that left corner. What a connection that's developed into. Wentz to Ertz.
Eagles roll the Giants, perhaps save their season in the process. Eagles now 3-3, and they're still a scary team because once Wentz gets back in the flow, which he looked a lot better last night, coming off the torn ACL, the Eagles are an improved team when he is back to 100%. So don't write off the Eagles quite yet, and it's a division that's certainly winnable. Cowboys are struggling. Redskins have some issues, no question. And, of course, the Giants have all kinds of issues and just waiting for OBJ to implode, even though he got paid, which, you know, he did the right thing coming to camp, reporting early and this and that, and did what he needed to do. Giants decided to give him all the money, but he's kind of like Terrell Owens a little bit. And I just don't know if it's wise to give that much money to a guy like that. Now if you try to trade him, you're going to have to – somebody's going to take on the baggage of the problems he brings to the table plus all the money. The Giants, that signing could end up handcuffing them for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's easily Dez Bryant too, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. Kind of like that kind of category. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't think it was the right thing move to make at the time. You know,
I was kind of surprised.
That's not one of those hindsight 2020 type of deals. You know, it's like, yeah. I don't know if a guy like that is worth that kind of money that you're going to have to spend, and then what's his mental state going to be as he continues on?
Yeah.
You just don't know with guys like that.
You don't. Yeah. And Giants are now 1-5. Eagles are 3-3. We'll talk Chiefs-Patriots, a big matchup Sunday night. Plus, the Broncos have a big game against the other undefeated team in the National Football League, the Los Angeles Rams. And we'll talk K-State football, Big 12 football game last night, maybe a surprise to some. And top 25 games this weekend, Nebraska's trying to get off their snide still. And we will hear from a couple of well-respected people, one a journalist and the other a coach, what they had to say about Tex Winter, who passed away the other day, and also a statement from Kobe Bryant, plus Major League Baseball playoff predictions, and NBA starts next Tuesday. And the UFC latest, there's new information after that title fight this past weekend with McGregor and Khabib. But first, local sports, and we got high school football tonight.
Yes, tonight's high school football coverage here on Katy Country 94 will start at 5:40. We'll preview the area matchups in the Football Express presented by Cunningham Telephone and Cable. Excuse me, and then we'll go with pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7 o'clock on Katy Country 94 and NCKSSports.com with Beloit hosting Concordia here this evening. Then on Z96.3 Through the Lake, Katy Country 94.com, St. John's Tipton hosting Lakeside, pregame coverage at 6:30 and kickoff at 7. And then our game night coverage will conclude with the local high school football scoreboard show presented by State Farm Insurance at 10:05 on Katy Country 94. So those are our games that are on our stations here. A lot of other important games going on this evening. Rock Hills looks to stay undefeated in district play there at Pike Valley tonight. 8-man Division 2, District 4, as well as Lakeside at St. John's Tipton, as we mentioned. And then Southern Cloud is hosting Lynn tonight. In 8-man Division 2, District 5, Osborne at Northern Valley. Thunder Ridge hosting Wilson. And Sylvan Lucas has Logan Palco there in Sylvan Grove. And as we mentioned, the NCAA Concordia at Beloit, Russell at Goodland, an important game as well in that district. And in the Mid-Continent League, Smith Center is hosting Republic County here tonight in 1A District 5 play. So that's a look at the local schedule here for this evening in high school football.
All right, Concordia Beloit's a big game tonight. It's a rivalry game, but now you add in all the playoff implications. The winner of this game has the inside track for the 3 seed out of this district, and it's a big difference. You probably would go to Hugoton first-round playoffs instead of going to Pratt. And Pratt is significantly better football team than Hugoton, from what we understand. So it's a big game for Beloit and Concordia. And, of course, there's a rivalry. Coach Gober talks about that.
There's everything that's cracked up to be. It's two schools that, you know, have been a long history of not liking each other. And so, you know, our kids are excited, and they've been ready for this. Ever since Scott Sue was over, they were ready for this game. And, you know, we talked about how I shouldn't have to say anything to you guys, get you guys pumped up this week because it's Con Week.
Yeah, if you just say Concordia Week, it's like Marty used to say when the Chiefs played the Raiders. It's Raider Week. That's all he had to say, man.
Yeah.
That's all he had to say. Great rivalries bring out the best in each opponent, usually. Sometimes the worst. It can get nasty every once in a while as well. And Austin Kingsbury, former Smith Center Redman and member of a state championship team at Smith Center, graduate in 2004. He's in his fourth year as a head coach at Concordia, and he talks about Beloit's physicality.
The thing that's probably always followed Beloit football around for at least as long as I can remember, is their physicality. I thought their offensive and defensive line was very physical. I thought they matched Scott City's physicality. And so I was impressed with those things. And Brad's done a nice job of coaching those guys up. I feel like they're very disciplined and sound, and they play very hard for him.
This has been an interesting game tonight. It's a big game. And you look at Concordia, they have a freshman and a sophomore in the backfield. They have a senior quarterback. They have a freshman on the offensive line. Beloit will as well. It's going to be interesting to see how this one pans out. The last 3 years, the games have been very close. But all 3 years, Beloit has prevailed. Beloit's won 5 of the last 6 meetings. And all these games recently have been first week of the season to open it up. Now it's week 7. We've always said, what would happen if Beloit Concordia played later in the year when they're more into the flow of things? Because a lot of times week 1, you see a lot of turnovers, and that's happened many times between Beloit and Concordia. Basically, pick the team that had the least amount of turnovers, and that's the team that's going to win. Could be the same thing tonight. Beloit and Concordia this evening on KD Country 94, KDCountry94.com, and live video stream at NCKSSports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. Lakeside is at St. John's Tipton tonight, and Coach Christine of the Blue Jays talks about the Lakeside passing game. Lakeside throws it quite a bit.
You know, hopefully we can get a little pass rush on them. You know, it's one of them things, you know, dialing up defense is, if you get to the quarterback, that's the easiest pass defense you can. Well, I'm not always sold on getting to the quarterback because the good teams, you won't always be able to get to the quarterback, so you got to play pass defense. So I think it's a good challenge for all of our team.
So Lakeside likes to pass the football. St. John's Tipton keeps it on the ground, and Coach Dusky of Lakeside talks about that.
They do things fundamentally sound. They fire off the ball. They go and get their blocks, and they're quick, and they run with power. And, you know, they get to that second level of a defense and make sure they hold on to those guys that they're going to get. And we've struggled with that. We've struggled with our interior linemen trying to keep the offensive front line at bay. And then our linebackers have struggled with breaking off of blocks and going and flowing to the ball. So I know it's going to be tough.
Contrast in styles tonight, isn't it, Dusty?
Yeah, and that's exactly what those two coaches are both talking about, is exactly the concern for each defense is how do you stop the strength of the other team. So obviously if you're St. John's Tipton, you want to force Lakeside to run the football if you can, and it's vice versa with the Lakeside defense. You try to force St. John's Tipton to pass. But right now I think the biggest thing is, for both of these teams, with their low numbers, is their health. And Lakeside seems to be pretty healthy right now, and St. John's Tipton is not. So you could see a game tonight where, you know, on paper, St. John's Tipton is a pretty heavy favorite, you would think. But, you know, that doesn't always play out. And St. John's Tipton is going to be playing some younger guys, a guy at corner and Jared Eitzman that hasn't started yet, or at safety. And so he's a freshman still learning things there on defense. And so, you know, there are some issues there that St. John's Tipton will have to overcome as far as the injuries are concerned. But other than that, you know, it's just about, you know, doing everything to your strengths. And right now St. John's Tipton's strengths are probably just a little bit better than Lakeside's. I'd probably still give them an edge. But, yeah, both defenses are going to have their hands full with different variations of offense tonight.
Lakeside at St. John's Tipton tonight on Z96.3 The Lake. Volleyball tournaments this weekend.
Yes, coming up tomorrow, the Mid-Continent League tournament will finish. That started yesterday. Smith Center got 2 wins yesterday to start 2-0 in their pool. And that'll continue tomorrow morning in Smith Center at 9 o'clock. And then also tomorrow, the Northern Plains League tournament over in Beloit. Pools 1 and 2 will be at the Beloit High School courts, and then pool 3 and 4 will be at Beloit Elementary School. So that's coming up. Everything begins tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock in Beloit with the Northern Plains League tournament.
All right. And the latest volleyball rankings and football rankings are posted. Go to NCKSSports.com. Once again, the Express brought to you by Cunningham Telephone Cable, 5:40 tonight. Previewing the matchup, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock kickoff for our games. As we mentioned earlier, if you miss any of that, go to NCKSSports.com. Our coverage concludes with a local high school scoreboard show brought to you by State Farm Insurance at 10:05. The big game in the National Football League this weekend, without question, is the Sunday night game between the Chiefs and the Patriots in Foxborough. Last year, the Chiefs won 42-27. It was the debut of Kareem Hunt. Alex Smith had a big day. Now the Patriots get a deal with a new guy quarterback. That's Patrick Mahomes, who's having an MVP type of season. 14 touchdown passes, just 2 interceptions. He's ran in a couple as well. But this is going to be interesting because Bill Belichick, when he goes up against rookie or first-year starting quarterbacks, he's won 9 games in a row against those type of quarterbacks. But Mahomes and the Chiefs have broken all kinds of streaks lately. They broke the streak in Pittsburgh, winning there, first time since 86. Jaguars hadn't allowed a 300-yard passer in almost 2 years. Mahomes took care of that, 304 yards passing. So that's history. Mahomes and Reed and even the Patriots, they don't really care about that. But it's interesting nugget to throw out there. Belichick usually has had the upper hand against young quarterbacks. Here's Andy Reid on what Belichick may do on Sunday night.
He's going to form fit the defense to your offense and do what he feels is best there. It might be completely different than what he did the week before. And he's done a great job with that over the years. Do the same thing on offense. They're gonna fit it to what they feel are your tendencies and matchups and everything else. And I think he's great at that. You know, Bill's gonna find what he feels is best, and he'll test you. But again, you gotta trust your eyes and what you see and go play.
Eric Berry will not play again. He hasn't practiced. He won't play on Sunday night. We've kind of gotten used to that. Justin Houston, doubtful, coming up on Sunday. I don't think he's going to play. That means that others will have to step up. Tano Passanau, Breland Speaks. If you don't get a pass rush on the Patriots, it could be a long night. But we'll say this. The Patriots' pass rush isn't very good. In fact, the Chiefs is better with Dee Ford. Patriots' pass rush isn't very good. I don't know if the Patriots have enough defensively. I think they're going to have to fool Mahomes and trick him, because if you just go straight up offense versus defense, the Patriots don't match up very well at all in this game. Could be a shootout. We say that about every single week with the Chiefs and whoever they're playing. So far, they're 5-for-5, although their defense got it done big time against the Jags last week. But the Patriots are a better offensive team. They got Julian Edelman back. He could really cause problems with the Chiefs over the middle with those mesh patterns. You got Gronkowski, a talented tight end. And, of course, you've got Josh Gordon now stretching the field. And maybe, I would say he is at this point, the greatest quarterback of all time in Tom Brady. Patrick Mahomes talks about facing the Patriots and Hall of Famer Brady.
They tailor their defense kind of to the teams that they're playing, so you will get some unscouted looks. But, I mean, that's just kind of part of football, especially when you have the weapons that we have on this offense. So, for us, we're just going to go in with a good game plan and hopefully execute that at a high level. It's going to be a great opportunity. He is one of the greatest quarterbacks, if not the greatest quarterback to ever play. And so for us, we're going to just go in. And like you said, I'm going against their defense, but as a team, we're going to go in and just try to compete. And, I mean, they're a good team in the AFC every single year. And so just get to compete against one of the best teams in the league is going to be an awesome opportunity. Yeah, I definitely watched a good amount of him in college. Coach Kingsbury actually played with Tom at one point, and so he liked to show me some things that he did where he's in the pocket, his pocket movements and stuff like that. And so I've definitely taken some things from him, but I mean, he does it at such a high level, and it's something that you have to strive to be like. He works extremely hard taking care of his body. He puts everything he has into football, and it is going to be a great opportunity just to go up against him and that team. They're going to have a game plan on trying to stop some of your better guys. But with us, I feel like the mentality that we've had this entire season, just whoever's open, get them the ball and let them make the play is going to help us a ton. But, I mean, they're going to do some stuff to try to confuse me, I guess you would say. But I'm just going to try to just maintain our game plan and keep working. Yeah, for sure. I mean, when you Coach Reed says it, when you play in this league, you want to play against the best. And they've been one of the best for a long time. And so it's an awesome opportunity to get to go up against them and see what we can do against them.
Great challenge for the Chiefs going to Foxborough, trying to beat the Patriots for the second straight time on the road in Boston. And I enter Foxborough, but I was just thinking about the Boston fans. They got it pretty good, pretty spoiled. Patriots, Celtics are good again. And then, of course, you got the Red Sox that are in the ALCS. More on them
Bruins
coming up.
Haven't been bad either.
Yeah, I got to say, they're not bad either. So they've got it going right now, and their Red Sox just beat the hated Yankees. So it's good to be a Boston fan right now if you're a fan of all those teams. In regards to the injury report, Eric Berry did not practice. Justin Houston, hamstring, did not practice yesterday. Tanau Passanau did not practice with an ankle, so we don't know how much he's going to participate coming up on Sunday night. Eric Murray, safety, is it looks like he's going to be out. He has not practiced all week due to an ankle. And that means that Jordan Lucas and Ron Parker will be your safeties. And Lucas, hopefully he can pick up the slack, which I think he can. But if he gets hurt or Parker gets hurt, then the Chiefs are really, really thin at safety. Now, the Chiefs aren't the only team dealing with injuries. The Patriots have their share. Josh Gordon, hamstring, limited practice yesterday. Rob Gronkowski, ankle, limited practice. They'll both go on Sunday night. Sonny Michel, the rookie running back out of Georgia, a knee injury, limited practice. And Danny Shelton, good defensive tackle, limited practice yesterday. So both teams dealing with some injuries. And the Chiefs are used to not playing with Eric Berry. He's been out all year long. So Chiefs and the Patriots. The Patriots are favored by 3, which means it's a push. Automatically, you get 3 points just by being at home. So they're calling this one a toss-up, but giving the Patriots the edge since they're at home. The all-time series is led by the Chiefs, 18-14. We mentioned the Chiefs won last year, 42-27. The Patriots have won two in a row after starting 1-2. And the Chiefs' offense, fifth in the NFL overall. Patriots just 22nd. The Chiefs' defense, last in the league. The Patriots, 16th, only 21st against the rush. So the Chiefs have all kinds of weapons. I don't think the Patriots can keep up with the Chiefs unless they can confuse Patrick Mahomes. And if they do that, then maybe he'll throw a pick or two, and that could be huge, because I don't know if the Chiefs' defense can stop New England's offense with the weapons they have. I think Julian Edelman is going to be a big factor in this ball game. He'll keep moving the chains. And the Chiefs aren't good against the run either, and the Patriots can run it a little bit. So it could come down simply to one mistake in this game, a turnover, whether it's Mahomes or whether it's the Patriots in any form or way. Maybe Brady will throw a pick or a deflected pass, or there's a fumble or a special teams breakdown. But this should be a great game on Sunday night. You can hear it on Z96.3 The Lake. Pregame at 6 o'clock, kickoff 7:20. The Chiefs at the Patriots. And if the Patriots want home field advantage in the playoffs, if that's important to them, they pretty much have to win this game. If it's not that important to them, no big deal. And the Chiefs win, it's, I think, huge for the Chiefs, because they'd have tiebreakers over everybody in the AFC and then get division-leading Cincinnati at Arrowhead next Sunday night, win that one, which you'd be favored since you'd be at home, and Arrowhead will be rocking for a night game. It rocks anytime, but at night it's even more so. The Chiefs, if they get by New England, you're thinking 7-0. And you go 7-0, and then you got the Broncos coming home. You figure you'll beat the Broncos at home. Now you're 8-0 if you want to start looking ahead. You're 8-0, you go to Cleveland, and wouldn't it be ironic if the Chiefs' first loss of the year would be the Cleveland Browns, a team that went 0-16 last year. But I'm going to tell you, the Browns could easily be 5-0 right now, just like the Chiefs. Yeah. They found ways to lose, didn't have a kicker, didn't start the right quarterback. They are an improved team at 2-2-1. So I could definitely see the Chiefs. I think a good thing is if they beat the Patriots, having that Bengal game move to Sunday night, I think helps you refocus. Because I think if they beat the Patriots, they'd have a letdown against the Bengals, and they still may. But Sunday night will get you primed and pumped up, the adrenaline. But then the following game, you're going to be up. It's the Broncos. You almost lost them first time. I don't think you're going to have a problem with letdown there. The letdown game to me would be going to Cleveland. Even though you know Baker Mayfield's on the other side, I could see that being a letdown. And this is a team, every team in the National Football League, and that's why nobody goes undefeated since the Dolphins did, although the Patriots went undefeated through the regular season. That's why it's so hard to win every week, because you're going to have a week where you just all collectively let down your guard, or you start to read your press clippings, or you have some injuries, or you have a few bad breaks, or you're just not sharp and the other team plays above what they normally do, like the Chiefs did when the Packers were undefeated and came to Arrowhead under Romeo Crennel. The Chiefs beat the Packers with Romeo Crennel as their head coach. If that can happen, anything can happen. The Chiefs are not going 16-0. Mark it down. Nobody is. I don't think the Rams are either. But, man, if the Chiefs can win the next two games, it looks like they pretty much are going to have home field through the AFC wrapped up.
Yeah. It's like when the Chiefs start 9-0 and then Chad Johnson guarantees that the Bengals are going to beat them.
Yeah.
And everybody just laughs at him, and then the Bengals beat them.
And they spanked
them. They're 9-1 because they probably lost focus that week against a Bengals team that was not that good at that time. So it is. It's like you got to stay focused no matter who you're playing, but it's the NFL where you go into that game, we're 8-0. We're going to be fine. We're good. Whatever. Even if we lose this game, we're good. That's kind of the mentality that you have probably going into it. And you don't stay focused. You don't get up for that kind of game as you would the next three that they have. Mm-hmm. And so it is. That's that game that you fall into the trap and bye-bye. The Dolphins are going to go celebrate.
And the longer you're undefeated, the better shot you're going to get from everybody, because that'll make their season to knock off the last undefeated team or one of the top undefeated teams, whether it's the Rams or the Chiefs. So it's going to be an interesting game, Chiefs-Patriots Sunday night. Now, the Broncos have a chance. The Rams are going to get the Broncos' best shot, I do believe. The Broncos are ticked off. They played really poorly against the Jets.
Yeah.
The defense, which we've said is not what it once was, they gave up over 300 yards rushing in that game.
Yeah.
Case Keenum has not been particularly good this year. The running game hasn't been bad, but the Broncos sometimes get away from that running game.
Mm-hmm.
So they get the Rams coming to town. This is a dangerous game for the Rams. The Broncos are licking their wounds. This could rejuvenate the Broncos' season with a win. The Rams have two starting wide receivers that I think are going to clear concussion protocol, but they did have concussions their last game. That could take away a couple weapons for Jared Goff. Todd Gurley is just a stud, and the Broncos don't slow him down, and that's what's scary for the Broncos. If the Jets ran for 300 yards, what's Todd Gurley going to do against the Bronco defense? And you add in the Rams defense is pretty doggone good, and what's Case Keenum going to do at home against that Rams defense? I think the key to Denver, you got to get out early lead. You get early lead, you got a chance. You get behind 10-0, you're in deep trouble with that pass rush from Sue and Donald. By the way, Pro Football Focus has all these rankings out there. Marcus Peters is one of the worst-ranked corners in all of National Football League. They had a stat yesterday that he's been thrown at 17 times, and he's allowed 14 catches and 5 touchdowns.
And Tyler Lockett left him in the dust on Sunday.
So perhaps the Chiefs might have done the right thing.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, he's always been a guy that, like we've talked
he'll
about,
get burned.
He will get burned. Yeah, he's a ball hawk. He'll find the ball a lot, but he gets burned a lot. People target him a lot, and that's part of the reason he had so many interceptions, too.
Mm-hmm.
He gave up a lot of big plays, but he also had picks. I mean, they were targeting him since he was a rookie. They were going after him. I don't think that stopped, but it makes you look good when you have that many balls thrown your way.
Yeah.
You're going to make some plays on some of them.
I would agree. All right, Denver going to beat the Rams, Chad?
No.
Bronco? No?
No.
Okay. I think they got a shot.
You've always got a shot, but from what I'm seeing, man, the pass rush hasn't been there like it's been. You know, I mean, Von Miller hasn't had a sack since week two in the second quarter against the Raiders. You know, they got torched in the run game last week. I wish they would run the ball more because when they get in these situations, like you said before, where Keenum's got to throw the ball 3 downs in a row, they just haven't been very good.
Yeah.
And, you know, they pulled a couple of late ones out in that tight game against Kansas City and just fell short at the end of that. But there's a lot of question marks around that team, and I don't think that this is the week. You know, you talk about the Chiefs and the Patriots. That's a game that kind of has a feel like the first team to 40 wins.
Mm-hmm.
This one could be like the first team to 17 wins.
The Rams offense is really good.
The Rams won't have any problem getting to 17.
No, exactly. Following up my point.
Exactly.
And again, do you think the Broncos will beat the Raiders this week? No.
I think the Rams offense is just as explosive as the Chiefs offense, to be quite honest. Those are the two best offenses in football, except the Rams have a better defense.
Yeah.
Rams at the Broncos 305. Other NFL games, Tampa Bay at Atlanta. Atlanta has to win. They're 1-4. Pittsburgh at Cincinnati. Pittsburgh 2-2-1. Cleveland hosting the Chargers. Buffalo's at Houston, Chicago's at Miami, Arizona at Minnesota, Indianapolis is at the Jets, Seattle at the Raiders, Jacksonville at the Cowboys, Carolina's at Washington, Baltimore's at Tennessee, Sunday Night Football, as we mentioned, the Chiefs at the Patriots, and Monday Night Football will be the 49ers at the Green Bay Packers. We turn our attention to college football as Kansas State will try to get back on track. They've lost 3 in a row. They're 0-3 in Big 12 play. 11 a.m. kickoff homecoming for K-State at Bill Snyder Family Stadium tomorrow morning as they'll take on the Cowboys of Oklahoma State. And earlier this week, we've heard from various people. Dalton Reisner, All-American preseason offensive lineman for K-State, said that they had a team meeting, players-only team meeting, and it went very well.
I'm going to be honest. I went to Coach Snyder and told him that I felt that we needed to get together as a team. And sometimes with football teams, you need to just talk as players, right? Because it's our team. The coaches are a huge part of it. You guys are a huge part of it. The whole community is a huge part of this football program. But at the same time, sometimes you got to get together, the 110, 115 guys that are a part of the team, and you just got to talk as brothers. You know, we're a family. Sometimes you got to get everything out there, positive and negative. And I felt that was needed. I got together and did that. The last one I think I might have did was when we were 3-6, my redshirt freshman year, and we were 3-6 at that point. Had a players-only meeting, kind of got the train back on tracks and won the last 3 games of the year. So I was sitting there thinking and said, hey, you know, we're 2-4. Let's not wait till we're 2-6 or 3-6 or, God forbid, whatever that might have been. So I wanted to get the team together right now, especially whenever things were pretty good. It came off of a game that we played pretty well offensively and a lot of things to build off of, and just get the guys together and talk about it. So it was a really beneficial meeting. Guys got off their chest what they think that needs to change within the player. And the reason it was a good meeting, guys, is because it wasn't about what can the coaches do different, what can the community do different, what can everyone else do different. It was what can we do different as players. And in those meetings, that's really beneficial to know. It's like it's not going to be beneficial if we get together and just talk about what other people can do for us, because a lot of that stuff's not going to change. But what we can change is what we do.
Dalton Reisner, players meeting. Sometimes those meetings end up going very well, and it can change your season. But it's one thing to talk the talk. It's another to go out and walk the walk. And you know, this is where K-State has to – I mean, if they don't beat Oklahoma State, there's really – you don't see the scenario where they're going to be a bowl team. So they've got to win this game. They got to beat Kansas. They got to beat Iowa State and Texas Tech. Those are the four games that look winnable. At TCU looks more winnable. More on that in a moment. Oklahoma at Oklahoma, that doesn't look winnable, of course, but K-State's went in Oklahoma when people thought they weren't going to win, and they've won there before. So nothing's impossible, but you just got to get the ship turned into the right direction. And one of the big problems for K-State has been special teams play, and Bill Snyder's addressed that.
You know, the fumble of a kickoff is, and it's not just the guy that's catching the ball and running with it. I mean, if you go back and scrutinize, you know, the snap, you know, we missed two blocks on the same guy that would have that created the fumble. So it's execution throughout and assignment throughout, and we're special teams. I mean, you can get a few guys banged up on offense and a few guys banged up on defense, and you can still circumvent that, you know, on that side of the ball. But you know, those are all guys then that are on special teams. So we're kind of searching and reaching to get, enough personnel, you know, and so that we struggle with that a little bit because you got guys playing sometimes out of position and don't have any real backups, you know, right now for them.
Okay, one of the issues for Kansas State this year, as we've well documented this, and people know, if you're a K-State fan, you know what's going on, and that has been the issue at quarterback. And every week we don't really know what they're going to do till they start their first offensive series. And John Kurtz was on of K-Man Radio, sports director there, host of the game weekdays from 4 to 6. And he was one that asked some tough questions, Coach Snyder, a week and a half ago. And that's the one where Coach Snyder kind of lost his cool towards the end. And we talked about with John the other day, you know, how can you explain it? Because it seems like Coach Snyder, who's always been, you know, certainly stubborn at times, even more stubborn about his quarterback situation.
This is just my opinion. This is not based on any inside information that I have, but my opinion is that most of it is him being stubborn. I think it's stubbornness over the fact that, one, he wants a quarterback that's going to be able to execute the quarterback run game, which, I get in principle, and he even said the stat sheet doesn't matter at one point this year when we were giving him stats about this, but after the Baylor game, Skylar Thompson's now at 3.7 yards per carry, Alex Delton's at 3.1. So, I mean, it's just a fallacy at this point based on what we've seen this year to say that Alex Delton gives you a better chance in the quarterback run game. But I think that's a part of what it is. He feels like Alex Delton is the better runner, and he wants to have him in there because of that. I think he also likes the fact that Alex Delton has been in the program longer. I know some of the grumblings I've heard about Skylar Thompson, they may be upset about some of the reads he makes sometimes, so they're not totally thrilled with his decision-making. But to me, what it boils down to is, yes, it's a guy who had a preconceived notion about what he thought would happen at the quarterback position, who he preferred for whatever reason, and that hasn't played out. Instead of picking one direction and going with it, they have just waffled. You know, I think the other thing here, and this is what's frustrating to me and what I would tell you should be frustrating to the fans, is the fact that I think the better move for the future of this program, based on Skylar Thompson's talents, would have been to just go into this year and build around him, play some of the younger wide receivers. Sebastian Taylor is a nice young receiver that they have. Malik Knowles is a true freshman that I've heard great things about from what he's done since he got here. Give those guys experience, let them work together, take your lumps that way. I think when you're a 78-year-old head coach, you start thinking, well, if I have a 4-win season trying to develop somebody for the future, is that going to get the heat on me so much that someone's going to come push me out? So I think you just have this dichotomy of thinking where Bill Snyder is thinking more short-term, how can I keep going to bowl games and keep this going, whereas I would tell you as a fan, you should prefer thinking much more globally about the program and long-term about what you have there. So I think it's all of that wrapped up into one.
K-State has a lot of issues we know about. So I asked John what is, in his opinion, the biggest issue facing Kansas State football right now.
I think one of the problems here is that you have offensive coordinators, new offensive coordinators, Colin Klein and Andre Coleman, who are the ones doing the majority of the recruiting, and they all want to push more towards a modernized offense. They clearly prefer Skylar Thompson going into the year as the quarterback, and they've been recruiting, actually, for this 2019 class more towards adding players that fit the ecosystem of a more modernized, up-tempo offense that's breaking away from what Bill Snyder has been doing. They have a couple speedy, quick wide receivers committed. They have a pass-catching tight end, which is not what we've seen at all from K-State here recently. All these signs of moving towards trying to modernize the offense, but it's not really in sync with what the head coach wants. Bill Snyder's pretty disconnected from recruiting and has been for a while. So there's this weird disconnect between what seemingly the young offensive coaches want to do, and it's not even really necessarily what Bill Snyder wants to do. He does not have much involvement at all in the recruiting game, and I think that's another problem in and of itself. But they've got this weird right now issue where you're trying to merge two different worlds. You're trying to serve two different masters in a lot of ways. If you are going to play Alex Delton on this team while still recruiting in 2019 for the more spread offense. So that's another one of the, to me, big global problems with what's happening with the program right now.
So in other words, they're not on the same page. We've kind of known that, thought that for a while, but the recruiting angle is interesting. That caught my ear quite a bit. And some other K-State fans texted me, and that stood out to them. The whole interview we had with John Kurtz talking about that we knew Coach Snyder wasn't super involved with recruiting, but the fact that the younger coaches are recruiting more for a spread offense and Coach Snyder is stubborn and seems to be against it, how can that be successful? It just won't be, and it hasn't been. And if you're not recruiting the quarterback to fit what Coach Snyder wants to run, but Snyder's still going to be the coach but wants to run that offense, you just got two sides banging heads.
Yeah, and it doesn't work. I mean, why are you going to recruit a pass-catching tight end at all?
Right.
In this system? Because I mean, the last one that they had was in 2011 and 12 was Zach Trujillo. Mm-hmm. Like, he was the last guy that was actually a downfield threat to catch the ball as a tight end. I can't think of anybody since then that's been any guy that they actually that they even want to target. And there's been a lot of talk about how wide receivers aren't getting open for K-State and things like that. You know how you can help them get open? Have a tight end and running back passing game mixed in.
That would help.
You know, you don't just look at two or three different wide receivers down the field.
Are you saying Travis Kelce helps the Chiefs passing game?
Oh. Yeah. Kareem Hunt does too.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
Spencer Ware at times can even do it.
Huh.
It's just like we complain about the receivers not being able to get open. Well, all you're doing is looking for Schoen and Zuber on every pass play, it seems like.
Yeah.
And Reuter maybe every now and then. Another receiver. There's literally three receivers that I can think of in my head that they're looking at down the field on pass.
They don't involve tight end at all.
No. And tight end, they don't. Running back screen, we've talked multiple times about how that's just gone from K-State's offense. And the crazy thing about it is, historically under Bill Snyder, those things have been there.
I can remember a Big 12 championship game where the screen worked pretty well.
Screen worked good.
Oh, yeah.
Thomas Hill, tight end, down the field.
Yeah.
Had a touchdown in the game. Or Brian Casey, actually, in that game. Thomas Hill was another tight end. They had two tight ends that year that could catch the ball down the field in 2003. Brian Casey's the one that caught the touchdown. Justin Swift was one of the best tight ends that K-State's ever had in the 98 team. Yeah. And they got him the ball when they needed to.
Yeah.
And it just – none of it makes sense from that standpoint. We talk about Snyder's offense doesn't involve that, but it does. Like, you've seen it in the past, and I don't know where it went.
It disappeared. There's no question about that. And I think, in fairness, K-State, other teams, the screen passes disappeared from the play.
Yeah.
I don't understand. When teams are going to blitz, and they blitz, or they got a lot, great pass rushers, throw a screen in their direction. Vaughn Miller's going to come at you so hard, throw a screen his way to Kareem Hunt. And the Chiefs will do those types of things. But many teams don't. And even at college level,
everybody wants the
it.
Bubble screen instead of the running
back
screen. I know.
It's like they forgot that it used to be the old middle screen, which we hardly ever see anymore. Riley Gates of GoPowerGat.com, our guest every Tuesday, brought to you by Hanson Auction Realty and Heineken Electric. He was on Tuesday, and he doesn't like K-State's chances against Oklahoma State.
You know, I just don't like this matchup right now. I just don't think that K-State has the weapons, the tools to necessarily run with Oklahoma State right now. And, you know, you can point to the fact that they've given up a lot of points on defense this year to teams. And I'll say, yeah, I agree with you. It looks like their defense is struggling, but you know, until K-State's offense takes the field and really asserts itself, you can't give them the benefit of the doubt against anybody, really. So I don't like it. I mean, I think it's going to be another loss. And, you know, you're probably going to go the entire month of October without a win if you don't win this game. So that is a weird world to be in right now.
If you missed our interview with Riley Gates on Tuesday or John Kurtz on Wednesday, you can go listen to those on our Katie Country Knife website. I go to the podcast center, the Sports Ticket. Or also follow us on our Facebook pages, KD Country 94 and The Sports Ticket. So K-State hosting Oklahoma State tomorrow at 11 a.m. KU has the week off, but they made some noise. They fired their offensive coordinator. That should solve everything. Mm-hmm. Even Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, said yesterday on our show, that seemed to be a bit of a desperate move. I got to thinking about this a little bit more. I think it comes down to this. David Beatty knows that unless something really changes and he wins a few games, he gets a marquee win, he's not back next year. So if I'm going to go out, I'm going to go out on my own terms, and I'm going to go out with me calling the plays or having the final say. I think that's what it came down to. I'm going to go down fighting. It's going to be with whatever quarterback I decide. It's going to be based on what I approve of in the play calling area. And Doug Meacham, you're this kind of looks like the scapegoat, but, you know, it's not working. So I'm moving on. I don't know how it's going to work. I don't think it's going to work well, but could be wrong. So since there's a lot of positive things to say about KU football, then the defense is pretty good. Let's talk basketball, shall we? LeGerald Vick coming back to the Jayhawk basketball team. He said that he was done. He wasn't coming back. He declared for the draft, but he didn't hire an agent. And nobody was really interested in drafting him, and he didn't pick up with any G League team or anything like that, developmental league. And then he came back to Kansas. Some people said Bill Self maybe shouldn't bring him back because he's had some issues off the court. Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks every Thursday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency in Beloit, says that Vic has been a model citizen and Self loves what he's seeing.
He called him a 10 in terms of attitude, and this is a guy that, you know, it's no big secret, Self and him have gotten sideways at times because of attitude and focus and mindset and all of that. And I think he realized very quickly, and there's nothing more sobering in the world than saying you're leaving and going pro, and then it's kind of crickets, you know, in terms of the professional interest, at least to play stateside. And so I think he realized, okay, if they'll take me back, I have to walk the straight and narrow. I have to bring a positive attitude every day, have a smile on my face, skip in my step, set the bar in terms of effort level and lead by example and all of that, and really be the guy that is the prototypical perfect example of what you want, you know, your senior to be, at least to this point. And let's not give him 7 days of credit because he's been this way since he came back in the summertime. So let's give him 4 full months of really turning the coaching staff's heads, not just from when practice officially started, but really all summer long. He's been a changed man. Heck, he's got a different jersey number now. He's 24. Everything's different about this guy. Different haircut, different everything. Coach Self said he's more engaging. He's smiling. He seems happy. And, you know, obviously there were some distractions off the field, that off the court, that affected him, you know, earlier in his career. And hopefully none of that will ever happen. And so for LeGerald Vick, I mean, he really does look like a completely reformed, changed guy, and it's going to make the most of these next 6 months and hopefully put himself in a much more lucrative position to extend his career beyond Kansas.
So that's what you need to be excited about if you're a KU fan. And maybe if you're a K-State fan, you need to be excited about your basketball team as well, which sounds weird for K-State. But things looking up for Bruce Weber and his program. And, of course, Bill Self just reloads. And LeGerald Vick could be a key piece of this team this year with that attitude. And he has the freak athleticism. He was humbled by what happened this offseason. And I think he's very, very appreciative of Coach Self allowing him back on the team when they had parted ways. And so it sounds like he's trying to make the most of the opportunity. We'll see if it lasts throughout the season. Back to football. Big 12 football last night, maybe a bit of a surprise. Texas Tech goes to Fort Worth and beats TCU 17-14. Other Big 12 games this weekend, Baylor at number 9, Texas. West Virginia number 6 at Iowa State. Those are the three games. Those two plus Oklahoma State, K-State. Then KU will be at Texas Tech next weekend. And Oklahoma back in action next weekend at TCU. Top 25 action of note. Number 5, Notre Dame will host Pittsburgh. Number 3, Ohio State will host Minnesota. Number 7, Washington at number 17, Oregon. Michigan State will be at number 8, Penn State. And Missouri will be at number 1, Alabama. Good luck with that, Tigers. Number 16, Miami at Virginia. And the big game on Saturday night is Wisconsin, 15th at number 12, Michigan. Number 19, Colorado, one of 11 undefeated teams, will be at USC on FS1 late on Saturday night. The Nebraska Cornhuskers are 0-5, 0-3 in the Big Ten. Still looking for that first win for Coach Frost. They head to Evanston, Illinois to take on Northwestern. And you might say, well, they got a chance to win this game. And they do. Northwestern's 2-3 overall, 2-1 in Big Ten play. Northwestern won at Purdue week 1. Purdue won at Nebraska. Northwestern beat number 20 Michigan State last week on the road to East Lansing 29-19. So Northwestern's playing some good football. It's 11 a.m. kick tomorrow in Illinois. Nebraska looking for their first win of the season, and it's week 6. Who would have thunk anybody would ever would have said that about Nebraska Cornhusker football? It's week 6, and Nebraska's 0-5. It feels like we're in an alternative universe,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Like yeah. Even in their bad years, you know, it's just bad. Like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is shocking. I mean, it really is.
It
like,
really is.
I never thought I'd say that.
Nebraska fans thought 4-8 was bad.
Yeah.
And 5-7.
Man. How do you feel about 1-11?
It looks like what they might have. I bet you they're going to win one somewhere, maybe in the Big Ten. I'm saying 2-10 right now.
Yeah. I thought maybe I was selling them too short when I said they'd win three games this year. They're going to be stretching to get to three now.
You might have been overly optimistic.
Might have been too optimistic.
Yeah, absolutely.
I thought I was going to have people going, oh, what is he talking about? Three wins this year. That's crazy. Well, I might have been.
I think
you might have been too high.
But the other way. Right. Yeah, you're right. MIAA, Emporia State's at Central Missouri at 1. Actually, wrong one. Yeah, that's right. 1 o'clock this weekend. What else we got? Nebraska Kearney at Northwest Missouri. Pittsburgh State at Fort Hays State. One of those teams will have a two-game losing streak, and either one loses that game. Their playoff hopes are probably dashed. Fort Hays State maybe already dashed with two losses. Pitt State at Fort Hays at 2 o'clock there at Lewis Field. Okay, we move on here to Tex Winter. We mentioned him. He passed away at the age of 96 the other day. He was the inventor of the triple post offense, the triangle offense, and a couple of really nice quotes here that I want to play for everyone. If you don't understand the impact Tex Winter had on the sport of basketball, these two cuts should sink in. Steve Kerr is the head coach of the three-time champion Golden State Warriors. He's had three titles at Golden State as head coach. And they're going for a three-peat this year, have a chance to win their fourth title in 5 years in NBA, which, by the way, their season will start on Tuesday, when the Warriors will play Kevin Durant's old team, Oklahoma City. How convenient to start the year. Don't know if Westbrook will be ready to go or not. I'm guessing he will be after undergoing off-season minor knee surgery. So the NBA season starts on Tuesday. And Tex Winter, his handprints are all over basketball, college, every level, pro. And, of course, he was assistant with Phil Jackson with the Bulls and the Lakers. And Steve Kerr, of course, was a member of that Bulls team that won some of those championships, the second three-peat. And here's what Kerr had to say about Tex Winter.
Game, I want to talk about Tex Winter. Tex was one of the most important people in my basketball career. What he did for me and the path that he put me on, the chance that he gave me in Chicago along with Phil Jackson, changed my whole life. And I learned so much about basketball from Tex. The guy, Ron Adams, told me that Tex knew more about the history of the game and the fundamentals of the game than anybody he had ever met in his life. And I was lucky enough to play for Tex for 5 years and learn from him. A lot of what I do here with the Warriors is patterned after the things I learned from Tex. And what a life he lived. He was a unique individual and had touched thousands of lives. And today the news was tough. Tex was a special person to me and everybody who played for him.
That's Golden State Warrior head coach Steve Kerr. Now, this was really well done. Mike Greenberg, he's on the show Get Up in the morning on TV on ESPN, very popular personality on ESPN. Here's what Mike Greenberg had to say about Tex Winter.
One of the most important people ever to set foot on a basketball court died yesterday. His name was Tex Winter. And while you may not realize it, he was largely responsible for a lot of the best basketball that you ever saw. Tex was the man who brought the triangle offense to the NBA. He convinced Jerry Krause and then Phil Jackson of its genius. That offense won 11 NBA championships in a 19-year span. It is the reason that Jerry Krause and Phil are in the Hall of Fame today. And it was a huge factor in the immortal greatness of both Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant's careers. I guarantee they will both tell you so. I had the privilege to cover Tex Winter in Chicago in the 90s. I learned so much about basketball just from sitting and listening to him talk. He was also a very friendly, unassuming man who seemed to care a lot more about the game than he did his place in it. He was 96 years old when he died yesterday. Rest in peace, Coach. And if there is a pickup game going on wherever you are right now, I know you've got them working on the triple post.
It's pretty doggone cool, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You got a national personality like that saying such kind words about Tex Winter. Most of the laxed basketball fans out there don't know much about him at all.
Yeah, exactly.
And he wasn't a guy that went out and had to get all the exposure and all the attention, as Mike Greenberg just pointed out.
That's the thing, is like how much of an impact he had on the game, and he was only a head coach in the NBA for like two seasons or something with
and
the Hawks.
And did not have a good record. Yeah. Or the Rockets.
Or the Rockets, yeah, not the Hawks, the Rockets. And it's like, you know, it's, that impact that he had on the pro game, and he wasn't even a head coach. And that's why a lot of people don't probably know his name when you're thinking of that. You think of Phil Jackson when you, I mean, honestly, people think of Phil Jackson when they think of the triangle in the NBA.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't even have anything to do with Phil Jackson.
No.
I mean, it does because he was the head coach.
He coached it.
But he got the offense from Tex Winter.
Isn't that crazy? Right. And Tex Winter is still the last coach to lead K-State to a Final Four.
Yes, he is.
1964. Kobe Bryant had a statement. So did Michael Jordan. I don't have Michael Jordan's statement here about Tex Winter, but here's what Kobe Bryant said, and he has a picture, Kobe sitting with Tex Winter at a Lakers practice. Here's what Kobe said, my mentor. I sat with Tex Winter and watched every minute of every game during our first season together. He taught me how to study every detail. He was a basketball genius in every sense of the word. I'll miss him deeply. Thank you, Tex. I wouldn't be where I am today without you. Rest in peace. I mean, you've got the biggest names in all of basketball that basically say, he's the genius. I just carried out what he knew.
Exactly.
That's it's pretty amazing.
High praise, for sure.
High praise, no question. Major League Baseball playoffs. The NLCS gets underway tonight. Dodgers at the Brewers. It'll be Gonzalez on the hill for the Brewers against Kershaw of the Dodgers. That's 7:09 tonight on FS1. Then tomorrow, Dodgers-Brewers game two on Fox at 3:09. Miley will be the starter for Milwaukee, and Rio will be the pitcher for the Dodgers. Game one of ALCS, Astros at the Red Sox, 7:09 tomorrow night on TBS. Chris Sale versus Justin Verlander. That should be a good one. Then Sunday, game two of the ALCS, Astros at the Red Sox, David Price versus Garrett Cole. Once again, the ALCS is on TBS. The NLCS will be on either FS1 or Fox. Our quick predictions, we kind of made those the other day, but in case people missed them, but we'll go predictions in regards to games. So I've got the Brewers winning over the Dodgers in seven. That's my prediction there. Dusty?
Dodgers in six.
Dodgers in six. Chad?
Brewers in six.
Brewers in six. All right. The ALCS, I'll let Dusty go first this time.
Sox in seven.
Sox in seven. Chad?
Sox in six.
Sox in six. I'll say the Astros in six. I'll be a little bit different. So that means that I've got Astros versus Brewers, which is what TV does not want to see. And Dusty wants
that's what I want to
Dusty
see.
Dusty has what he right? wants to see and what the ESPN, CBS, and Fox and all the networks want to see, mainly, of course, Fox. I think they have the World Series again this year, would be Red Sox-Dodgers. L.A. market, West Coast versus the East Coast with the Boston market. But, yeah, Brewers-Astros series would not be too appealing for people on the coast, more than likely. Okay, turning our attention to the UFC, we close the show with this. The Nevada State Athletic Commission plans to suspend both UFC lightweight champion Khabib Nurmagomedov, I don't like saying his name, and Conor McGregor, I can pronounce that one, following their actions in the aftermath of their main event fight at UFC 229. The commission will issue their suspensions on Monday, pending a hearing on October 24th, when the commission chairman and his team will vote on whether to suspend the fighters indefinitely. Both fighters are likely facing sanctions for their actions inside the T-Mobile Arena on Saturday when Khabib was coming for starting the brawl. I ain't worded right. I can't write in this article. So forth and so on. I'll skip over that. Anyway, I want to get to what is more juicy. Khabib sent out a statement yesterday on Twitter, and he says right here, I would like to address the UFC. Why didn't you fire anyone when their team... that's McGregor's team, attacked the bus and injured a couple of people. They could have killed someone there. Why no one says anything about insulting my homeland, religion, nation, family? Why do you have to punish my team when both teams fought? If you say that I started it, then I do not agree. I finished what he, Conor McGregor, had started. In any case, punish me. He has a friend, a good friend of his, that's also a UFC fighter. I can't pronounce his name either. Anyway, they're threatening to suspend him indefinitely, where he won't ever fight again in UFC. This is a good friend of Khabib's. And he says, my friend has nothing to do with that. If you think that I'll keep silent, then you are mistaken. You canceled Zabara's fight, that's his friend, and you want to dismiss him just because he hit Connor. But don't forget that it was Connor who had hit my another brother first.
Just check the video. If you decide to fire him, you should know that you'll lose me too. We never give up on our brothers in Russia, and I'll go to the end for my brother. If you still decide to fire him, don't forget to send me my broken contract. Otherwise, I'll break it myself. And one more thing. You can keep my $2 million that you're withholding. You are pretty busy with that. I hope it won't get stuck in your throat. We have defended our honor, and this is the most important thing. We intend to go to the end. So he's saying, you keep the dang money. Ain't about the money. $2 million. He's saying, whatever, keep it. He's talking tough. Listen, the UFC would be crazy and really not very bright if they would suspend Khabib and Conor and don't let them fight again. Now, they might suspend them, or the Nevada Athletic Commission may suspend them for a while. These two have to fight again. The fans of sports want to see them fight again. They've got to fight again. And they fight again, it'll be a huge mega cow cash deal for both them and for the UFC. And some people still think this is all put on and rigged, which maybe it is. But Khabib is saying, listen, you're disrespecting me. You've said all these bad things about me. People keep talking about how we did this and jumped out of the cage, but leave out the other side of it. And the UFC's in a bit of a tough spot because they are hypocritical if they don't do something. If they do something to Khabib but nothing to Conor, mm-hmm. and allow Conor to throw stuff at a bus and people got cut because of broken glass and he hurt people, could have killed people, it would be a double standard. So there's some hypocrisy in that. So the UFC is going to be interested to see how they handle this whole thing. But Khabib has doubled down and said, listen, if my friend is banned from the UFC, I'm gone as well. Yes, there'll be other fights down the line. Maybe McGregor will be involved. Maybe he won't. But the fight everybody wants to see is Khabib versus McGregor, not anybody else.
Yeah.
And Khabib knows that.
Oh, yeah. That's why he's threatening people Absolutely. Right now and saying, hey, if
I'm
gone.
You don't have the guts to do that to me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's basically what it is. And he's trying leverage. To help his buddy out, too. You know?
Sure. Right.
At the same time, so we're, you know, I'm gone if he's gone, so you better make the right decision here.
Yes. I still say Dana White has a lot to do with this. Mm. I mean, they promoted it. They jazzed it up. They slapped the wrist on Connor, so did the legal system. And you know, kind of created that bed they got to lie in it. And I still don't believe Dana White when he says, I'm just sick to my stomach and I don't give a bleep about this fight and that's not the way we want things to go. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think he is becoming a little bit like Vince McMahon. Pretty good actor, somewhat fake.
Mm-hmm.
I think he understands the business.
I think that's a good comparison.
You like that?
Yeah. Now that I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, you said it and I'm like,
There are some parallels between WWE and UFC, except it does seem to be more real, of course. But if it isn't, we're all being duped, especially those that pay for the fights, which I have not. So I feel like I've
all the washed up UFC people are going to WWE too. So it's just let's just bring it all together.
That's
Brock Lesnar's done it before,
That's
you know.
True.
And it's like let's just merge it.
Yeah.
How far are we from that?
Closer than you may think. Concordia Beloit football tonight on Katy Country 94. Lakeside St. John's tipped on Z96.3 Lake. We'll give you all the scores tonight at 10:05 with the local high school scoreboard show. Brought to you by State Farm Insurance in Boyd. Have a great weekend, everyone.